The stars are right, and that means it's time for another episode of The Whisper in Darkness. I'm your host, The Man from Lang. Thank you very much for joining me today. On this episode, we are wrapping up our look at the Seeker cards in the Dunwich Legacy Investigator expansion for the benefit of new players. In this episode, we're going to take a look at Pathfinder Level 1, Expose Weakness Level 1, Deduction Level 2, Higher Education Level 3, and Deciphered Reality Level 5. There are spoilers throughout if you care about that sort of thing. If you enjoy what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Just a quick reminder of how we rate cards here on The Whisper in Darkness. The best of the best get an Elder Sign, while the worst of the worst get an Auto Fail, and the cards in between get a +1/+0, or Elder Thing respectively. Cards that you build around or are good in one particular deck get a Blessed token, while cards we believe are destined for the list of taboos or are simply bad for the game get a Curse token. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the patrons of this channel for their tremendous support. The Arkham Horror LCG community is amazing, and these people have gone above and beyond to bring you content like these player card reviews. If you'd like to support the channel's goals and see your name on this list, head over to patreon.com, sign up for a tier of your choice, and claim your rewards. That would be awesome. Special thanks to Cole Monroe Chitty for the amazing art that graces the channel, Nicole Fiscus for the new Whisper in Darkness logo that I use for the podcast, and Nate Lost in Time and Space for the intro as well as the overlays. Thank you very much. I couldn't do it without you. Without further ado, let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to our look at the Seeker cards in the Dunwich Legacy Investigator expansion for the benefit of new players. This is part 4 of our look at the Seeker cards. We're going to start off with... Man, oh man, this one is problematic, to say the least. This is Pathfinder, 3-cost asset that has 1 experience point. Talent as a free triggered ability during your turn. If you are not engaged with an enemy, exhaust Pathfinder, move to a connecting location. So this was released back in the Miskatonic Museum, the first Mythos pack that was ever released for the game. We should have known that this card was going to cause trouble because it features Monterey Jack. And if you watched our review of the Monterey Jack Investigator, you know what's coming. The amount of free movement that this card can generate is simply unparalleled. It doesn't require a slot, so you can play 2 copies and get even more abusive. It was tabooed to add 2 XP to it. In, I believe it was just the latest list of taboos that actually got around to tabooing this.
The Monterey Jack list, you know, that came out with him.
It was pre-Monterey Jack.
But this one is problematic from a design perspective, in that much like Shortcut, the designers have really struggled to create a movement effect in Seeker that can come anywhere close to this one. I suspect that they believe that tacking on the "you can't use this if you are engaged with an enemy" was going to balance this, but it really doesn't. Thoughts?
I like how they, that's the justification in the same set they get Acidic Ichor.
What?
Yeah, those Seekers are totally going to be engaged with all those enemies that were letting them blast away with "I've got a plan" and Acidic Ichor. That makes sense.
Well, okay, so Pathfinder, it's incredibly overpowered, all right? But I think we need to talk about why. Okay. Movement, you have to do in every scenario, right? You got to move around. Okay, so you play a card that costs 3, and you get basically a 4th action for the whole rest of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Leo DeLuca does this from the core set, and we don't think it's overpowered at all. Why? Because it costs more. It takes up a slot. Leo DeLuca can be shut off. He can be defeated, and he's in a and Leo DeLuca is also in a class where like their thing is getting additional actions. So what rogues don't have is unparalleled clue getting power. So with Pathfinder, Seekers come in with their unparalleled clue getting power, you know, which you need to win the game, and then they take Rogue's Lunch and add that into their smorgasbord of unparalleledness. So they've got the strongest, most efficient movement effect in the game, and they have the strongest clue getting power in the game. This is becoming, this is a problem, Yeah, why did this need to be a secret card? This really should have been a rogue card, because in rogue, they get that extra movement with if they were to have rogue Pathfinder or Leo DeLuca or elusive or think on your feet, but they pay for it in not being the very best at clue getting. That's why Pathfinder's overpowered.
I mean, it's so mind-boggling to me, honestly. Like, the fact that you can have two of them on the board, it makes it even more stupid. Yeah, like I said in our review of Shortcut, I just think the designers just clearly underestimated how much movement impacts the game. You know, where they're kind of it felt like they were just pretty willy-nilly with how movement effects worked in the early sets of the game. Like, oh, just move across the map, no big deal, that's fine. But then you get to like Pathfinder and Shortcut that just break the action economy of the game completely entwined. Like, it's just silly.
And I think the important thing to point out about Pathfinder is that the biggest issue from a design perspective is that they have tried to design cards that have to deal with Pathfinder in the environment. So they
Yes.
have designed several movement effects that come up short. There was one in the Innsmouth Conspiracy. I can't even remember what it's called now because nobody plays it. I believe there was Esoteric Atlas let you
Yes.
move around. That was one of
Yes.
them. Again, just this is like, why bother playing this? Like, it takes up a slot, I think. You know, when I've got Pathfinder at my disposal. But then you come to the Edge of the Earth and they design hiking boots,
Oh, yeah.
which has to fit in this Pathfinder environment. And so they either have to make it better than Pathfinder, or it's going to be worse than Pathfinder. And so you combine Pathfinder with something like hiking boots, and all of a sudden, this movement issue that they have created just gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
And
And all along the line, we still don't know why the clue-getting faction had to steal the lunch of the extra actions class. Like, why did this have to be a secret card and not a rogue card? Why does it have to steal lunch? Why does it have to steal the rogue's lunch? I don't know. Yeah.
Now, they did tack on an extra 2 XP if you're playing with the list of taboos, but this is really my problem with the list of taboos, is that tacking 2 XP on this card does not solve the problem. You
Not at
can,
all.
if you are earning enough XP and campaigns, I would say after Dunwich, Pathfinder in a Dunwich environment, I think is fine, but once you start to play in campaigns that are basically just vomiting XP on you, and you can basically purchase whatever you want, tacking 2 XP on this just doesn't stop it, you know, because you'll have plenty of XP and you get to play with all the broken cards anyway.
Once you expand your collection into TFA or Edge of the Earth, and you have an investigator like Monterey Jack or Ursula, that now all of a sudden that movement is, I get a
Oh,
free
yeah.
movement, I get a free investigation, or I get a free card or resource. Now it's all of a sudden like I'm taking a whole turn's worth of actions before I even take my turn's worth of actions. And it's like, why?
Yeah,
Why?
another thing is the fact that the effect is fast and doesn't take an action actually starts to become problematic because, and like, Seekers have the most of these, but if Pathfinder said, when you take a move, as in you spend an action to take a move, you get to move an additional space, that'd be much less bad because at least your turn is still confined to three actions. You might get like extra effort out of those three actions, but you're taking three actions. Yeah, like that's when, and then you, because the problem with that is, when things are fast and are on top of your three actions, you can start stacking them on top of each other. And you go, I'm going to draw some cards and I'm going to evade some enemies and I'm going to teleport across the map and then I'm going to move again and then I'm going to take some investigates. Then I'm going to take my investigates. You know, that's when things start getting problematic. But if it
No.
was like, but if in order to do all that, you like couldn't because each one of those effects cost you an action, you know, an extra powerful action, but an action, then it'd be much less bad.
Right.
But yeah.
And I think the other caveat with Pathfinder is that oftentimes you don't need to move two locations, right? So in this
Exactly.
situation that you presented, right, where if you move, you get to move again, that rarely comes up. versus Pathfinder where, oh, I get to move to the next location. Great. I'm always going to do that.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, especially in that play style where it's like Seeker moves to location, grabs clues, moves to next location. And like you said, you combine that with an investigator like Ursula from the Forgotten Age who gets a free investigate when she moves to a location. And then later Monterey Jack from the Edge of the Earth who gets cards and resources for that movement. Throwing free movement on top of that is just giving people cake on top of everything else.
Yeah.
It's just, it's too much. It's too much. And I think initially, I mean, I think initially everybody sort of recognized how good Pathfinder was when it was initially released, but we hadn't received all of the effects that play with it. And so it was, it was okay. And I think as a solo player, I really appreciate having access to a card like Pathfinder, because as a solo player, you often need those extra actions in order to succeed. And so having a Leo DeLuca in Rogue and Pathfinder in Seeker gives you access to those extra actions. And Pathfinder does cost an XP, which takes it away from, you know, most investigators that don't have an off-class Seeker. But I think as we have received more and more of these movement effects that sort of combine together, it's become a big issue.
Yeah, Pathfinder is part of a problem where Seekers got a really big leg up and they started eating lunches, as we've been describing here in Dunwich Legacy. But it kind of sets them down a path where they ascend to godhood as the card pool expands because of the standards that were created by the Dunwich Legacy.
It puts the design space into a pigeonhole, right? Where it's like Man from Lang, you pointed out, like, every movement effect is measured up against Pathfinder. And that's just not the position that any game developer wants to be in.
How would we rate this one?
Card's busted. Card is so busted. Holy shit. This card's so good.
Oh, it's a curse token for sure. Like, this is like why we have curse tokens, is for cards like this.
Yeah.
Is actually for Pathfinder specifically.
Just if only that were true, Nate. If only that were true. I believe we have curse tokens specifically for the Seeker class. Almost. Universally, unfortunately. Yeah, I really wish this, in hindsight, that this wasn't a warning sign of things to come for Seeker, and that they had the designers had sort of stepped back and evaluated the Dunwich Legacy and, you know, the legacy that the set had on the Seeker class and said, okay, we designed Pathfinder. Maybe that was a mistake. We designed Acidic Ichor. Maybe that was a mistake. We designed Higher Education. Maybe that was a mistake. And had stepped back and said, okay, we need to be more careful in our future designs to make sure that this class, like you say, Matastrophic, the benefits don't exponentially grow and you end up with this monster that they can't deal with. Yep. Unfortunately, future sets would prove that reevaluation never happened, unfortunately. And we would see more cards in future sets that just added to the problem. So this one gets a curse token, a well-deserved curse token, I think. And I think if you were playing in a Dunwich Legacy revised core set environment, I wouldn't worry too much about it. Play Pathfinder and enjoy it.
Oh, even better. Let Jenny take it. Let Jenny and Skids take it. There you go. Give the movement to the movement class. Take your green magic marker or use your imagination and let the rogues take it.
Yeah. Don't worry too much about it. Play it, enjoy it. And then as your card pool grows and you start to see sort of how these effects multiply, then maybe take a second, you know, give it second thought before you start to immediately upgrade into Pathfinder and go from there. We're going to go from the highs to the lows, unfortunately. We're going from the pinnacle to the very depths with Expose Weakness.
Oh,
it's a free event that costs one experience point. It has an intellect skill icon and two combat skill icons. The insight trait, it is fast. Play during any free triggered ability player window. Choose an enemy at your location. Test Intellect X, where X is that enemy's fight value. For each point you succeed by, reduce that enemy's fight value by one for the next attack performed against it this phase. I think this card is a thematic home run for Seekers.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah.
And I really wish this is the direction the Seeker class had gone. Yeah. Because as we saw with the Guardian card pool, Guardians, in this set, they start to receive cards that let them take damage for other players at the table. And they get to be like the sort of like, we will protect everyone. I think that the Seekers could have played the, hey, we're the nerds. We're at the library doing the research. We've looked up all these monsters. We know their weaknesses. We know how to help you fight. And I think the Seekers could have just slipped into that role as sort of not the ones who are the blasters and annihilating things with Acidic Ichor, but they're the ones who are helping the other investigators at the table do better, whether that's getting clues better or dealing with enemies better. We sort of see this theme developed a little bit here with Expose Weakness, and then a little bit with another card that came out in Path to Carcosa, Anatomical Diagrams, that sort of do similar things. This card is bad. And I don't think they got the power level quite right with this card, which we'll discuss in a moment. Unfortunately, this card appears in the same set that Acidic Ichor does. So they basically just shot themselves in the foot and said, you know, we would like to try to develop this theme as Seekers, as helpers for the Guardians and for other investigators at the table. But then it's like they almost just completely forgot about that and printed Acidic Ichor, and there's no reason to play this.
And more importantly, I've got a plan because of similar XP cost. Yeah, I was when you were talking about the idea of the support Seeker, notable one in the core set is Encyclopedia. Encyclopedia, the Seeker gives up their actions to gives up an action to let another investigator, often another investigator, not always another investigator, but often another investigator, get +2 to a skill of their choice. So like the idea of the support Seeker who has like Exposed Weakness, Encyclopedia, maybe Barricade just to hold off the enemies for a little while, you know, while the person whose job it is to deal with the enemies actually puts them in the ground. Like that seemed like it was gonna be a thing, but it's kind of ruined by them printing I've Got a Plan and Acidic Ichor.
So I guess the problem with it now, when I talked about, you know, I don't think they got the power level right with this one. And I think the problem with this card is that it doesn't really have a place in the game that we have now. And we've talked about this repeatedly through our reviews, where there is a game of Arkham Horror out there in an alternate universe where enemies are dangerous and fighting them is hard.
Yeah.
We did not get that game. This card fits in with that other game where the Seeker comes up and says, okay, you're fighting this 6 or 7 fight enemy. Let me help you reduce that fight value. And that will give the Guardian that little bit extra that they need to take this enemy out. The problem with this card is that enemies do not have fight values of 6 or 7. Most of them are 3 or 4. So you're not playing this card against enemies with 1 or 2 fight, because any Guardian worth his salt or her salt can take them out easily. You're probably not playing this card against enemies with 4 or 5 fight, because it has 2 combat skill icons, and why would you bother taking a skill test that would fail when you can simply commit this card to the skill test and get a guaranteed +2? Like, I understand why they put the 2 combat skill icons on here, probably for the Seeker.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Seeker needs the combat skill icons, but that runs counter to what the card is actually played for. I think if they had put any other icons on this besides the combat skill icons, it would have been better. But again, we don't have that game where enemies, where you would want to play this against a high fight value enemy.
It's only one attack, right?
Yeah, for and it needed XP. To be longer. It's the next attack, right? So you're getting this for one attack, which isn't enough. It really needed to be like, I reduce the fight value of this high fight enemy for the entire turn. And then it starts to actually do some work. So other investigators, say maybe the investigators who aren't necessarily responsible for enemy management can step up and say, hey, thanks for identifying the weakness in this monster. Now I actually have a chance to hit it.
I think this card would have been cool if it was like, make an intellect test, and if you pass, attach it to the enemy.
Okay.
And then it was like, it gets minus X fight value, where X is the amount you succeed by or something like that.
Yeah. I think also what's holding it back is the fact that you have to pass a test against the enemy's fight value. So even if you had the 5 or 6 fight enemy, you have to not only pass the pass the 5 or 6, but then you have to succeed by more in order to actually have it do something. So you're looking at, like, just to boost an attack by 2, you're looking at a difficulty 8 to,
And that's why I think it shoots itself in the foot by putting the 2 combat skill icons on there, because there's no point in doing the test. There's no point. And I agree with you, Nate. I think that would have been better, because I think the test just doesn't work on this in this card.
Yeah, I can see this being in that parallel universe game. And in that parallel universe game, the Guardian is using shotgun because the Guardian needs to take down 6 health enemies. And so the shotgun, seems to combo pretty well with an exposed weakness, because, you need to drop the difficulty of the combat check in order to get the shotgun to do lots of damage. So, I can see the alternate universe. It's not this universe. I wish exposed weakness had... I wish the difficulty was, it was test, intellect, difficulty 0. And just for every point you succeed by, you reduce that enemy's fight value.
Alas. What could have been, I think this would have been a very interesting way of taking Seekers, where they got a bunch of cards that helped other players at the table do good stuff. Like Encyclopedia, like Expose Weakness, I could easily see a clue discovery version of Expose Weakness that helps lower the shroud value of locations. I think there might actually be one. There is actually Arcane Insight, is it, that lowers the shroud value of locations?
Lowers shroud values,
Again, don't see that, haven't seen that played all that often, but it is out there. Or something that, hey, I know how to evade this enemy sort of thing. So how would we rate this one?
Power level wise, it's an auto fail, but
just design-wise,
design-wise, I'm going to bump it up to an elder thing, because I like the idea of it. Like we were saying, this is a direction Seeker should have gone with enemy management. They're not outright stealing other people's abilities, but instead they're helping the team become better at what they were already good at.
Yes.
Which, this is a cooperative game. Why aren't more cards like this?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. That's a really good question for a co-op game. Well, but in the universe we're in, it's a tentacle.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't go back and listen to what I gave this card originally, but I think I was trying to be charitable, and there is the combination with shotgun, which I think is one of the few cases where this card makes sense. But again, any guardian worth his or her salt will have that handled and does not need the Seeker to come in and help, unfortunately. So this one gets a tentacle. The next card in the box is an upgrade for deduction from the revised core set. This is deduction level 2. 2 intellect skill icons practiced and expert trait. If this skill test is successful while investigating a location, discover 1 additional clue at your location. 2 additional clues instead if it succeeds by 2 or more. I don't really have much to say about this one, other than if you're playing multiplayer and you're playing a Seeker, then you're probably buying this card.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is your job, is to discover clues. And especially when you hit three or four player, you're gonna need to investigate to get a lot of clues over the course of the game. Deduction is shaving you. Not only is it saving you actions, but it's saving you successful tests you have to make.
And two player though, I don't know if deduction level two is worth it. I think you really have to be playing three or four player for that to really make its case. Because I think the level zero version just does what you need it to in lower player counts.
Yeah, because a lot of locations have one clue per investigator. So if you're playing two player, you only have two clues. You don't need to discover three. Mm-hmm. Like deduction, if that's what you're paying the XP for. But in three or four, three plus Rex, like if you then, you know, if you discover, you can discover four clues in one action as Rex with this. So that's kind of crazy. But this is like this is your focus as a Seeker if you're going for all the clue discovery. And this card lets you do that.
Yeah. If you want to take some time out from like incinerating enemies and actually, you know, do your job.
Do your day job.
So like just give me a sec. I need to get these clues too. Just sit down, guys. I'll handle this game. You just keep the mobs off me. How would we rate this one?
I'm gonna give it a plus one. This is definitely a multiplayer card. If you're not playing multiplayer, don't pick it up. If you're playing three or four player and you're the Seeker, you're buying this card.
Yeah, I think this one's an Elder Sign because it is exactly what you want to be doing as a Seeker. It helps you accomplish it. It not only does it save you actions, but it saves you having to make tests. Like, it's about as good as it gets in multiplayer where you need this, where it actually does something. Then, yeah, Elder Sign.
I'm very tempted to give this one a blessed token simply because it seems like if you're playing multiplayer, you're buying this card. Otherwise, you're not. And so, yeah, I think I'll give it a blessed token. If you're playing multiplayer, this is pretty much essential. I don't know many Seekers who wouldn't pick up this card. I guess Norman is one since he simply can't. But, you know, if you're playing Rex or Daisy at this point, and you're playing with three or four players, then discovering three or four clues in one go is, you need to be able to do that. You just, it's, otherwise you're going to be too slow. So I am going to give it a blessed token for that reason. Seekers received one more doozy in the Dunwich Legacy expansion. This is Higher Education. It is the permanent that was released in the Blood on the Altar Mythos pack. Permanent asset, so it doesn't cost anything. 3 XP. Talent, permanent. While you have 5 or more cards in your hand, Higher Education gains. As a free triggered ability, spend 1 resource. You get +2 willpower for this skill test. Or as a free triggered ability, you can spend 1 resource. You get +2 intellect for this skill test. Each class received one of these permanent talents in the Blood on the Altar Mythos pack. Some clearly better than others. I think at the top you've got Higher Education, Streetwise, and Scrapper, all of which have hit the list of taboos since. And then below that you've got Blood Pact and Keen Eye. I don't think you need to be a brain surgeon to realize that spending 1 resource to get +2 bonus on willpower and intellect is way too good. There is a level 0 version in the Harvey Walters starter deck, if you want to go that way. I think that one reduces it to 1-1. But this one, I mean, again, they attached a cost to this card, that being you have to have 5 or more cards in your hand. But I think most of the time, that's not much of an issue.
You can afford to keep cards in your hand when you don't need to commit cards to skill tests because you have Higher Education out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's a positive feedback loop with this card.
Yeah.
You know, once you start generating resources with Milan, now I'm generating resources so I can spend those resources to do better investigations. Oh, I investigated. I get another resource. Oh, now all of a sudden I'm better at dealing with the encounter deck. Oh, now I'm good at investigating again. And then the cards just pile up in your hand. And then it just becomes an issue of, oh, I have 8 to 10 cards in my hand. I guess I should play one of these amazing cards.
Because I haven't drawn my laboratory assistant yet, and my hand limit is 8. I guess I should play one.
I guess I'll play this acidic ichor and kill everything on the board this turn.
Anyways. So one thing that is worth noting about this is that one could argue that the formation of the Tableau list at all was because of the holy triumvirate of Rex Murphy, Higher Education, and Dr. Malon Christopher, where it just became too easy to trigger Rex's ability multiple times a turn, and it was just like too much for the game. So that's how the Tableau list even came about, arguably, was because of that. But that being said, like, the words on the cards, the text there for Higher Education is just way overpowered. Like,
I just, it's too cheap. What dumbfounds me is that, like, they designed all these cards alongside the core set. So it's like, how did they not catch this? Like, how did they not see Malon Christopher plus Higher Education? Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
We don't know.
It just seems so obvious. And then, yeah.
You never know.
Rex just makes it even more absurd.
Yeah, I have my own theories for like a separate discussion about like the game as it was in playtesting. I mean, I think our alternate universe, when it comes to like the alternate universe with the baddies were difficult to deal with, is like kind of figures into that, you know, theory. I think tests were harder to pass in like playtesting versions of this game, and I think that led to stuff like this. That being said, the card we have now in the universe that exists, this card is like crazy good because it takes all the other effects like that where you spend resources to re-spend resources to boost your test and like doubles it, and then is released in the same box as an investigator where you want to be overshooting. It's like,
And Rex can take Lone Wolf if he really wants
to. And that's the thing, like you can just build, Rex can build his entire deck around getting Higher Education going if he wants to, and it's probably a good idea.
I've been looking at the art on this card, and a lot of the equations on the chalkboard are just scribbles. You can see, if you look closely above the guy's head on the left-hand side, you can see the Pythagorean theorem.
Yeah, there it is. You have to squint to, you know, if you squint real hard, you can see the Pythagorean theorem up there.
You could actually see that C equals the square root of A squared plus B squared.
And there it is. Yeah.
Yeah. They threw up the Pythagorean theorem and then some other equations, and it looks like law of cosines is somewhere in there too. But
why would you need that? I guess this is a geometry class. This is like high school education. This isn't higher education. They don't teach Pythagorean theorem in college, do they?
Mm-hmm. It's the foundation of trigonometry.
Yeah, but wouldn't that be like a high school thing, not a higher education thing?
I don't know. I mean, trigonometry's taught in college too.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But you know what the real sketchy part of this is what the hell is a bird doing on that man's shoulder? Like,
yeah, and the lighting is very strange. Like, I get it's trying to, evoke some mood, but, like, the students being so pale in comparison to the chalkboard.
It's like there's one beam of sunlight, right? There's one beam of sunlight that's going right at Sean Connery's head there, you know? And, you know, like with the ambient light, you could see all the equations, but those students, they look like ghosts. This is like Ghost Wife from, the Guardian set, but like all the students. Because look at them, they're all the same color, you know? They're all like this faded bluish.
Are they even there?
Are they even there? That's a good mystery. Is this teacher, like, is he like preparing for his lesson? Oh, I know what happened. This takes place in Blood on the Altar, right? Something went bad at Miskatonic University involving the experiment and the dormitories. And this guy is teaching. He showed up to class with a lesson prepared on the Pythagorean theorem, and he's teaching the spirits of dead students because someone failed Miskatonic University. And that's what this is.
And it was the designers of the Seeker cards for making this card too good.
Here's another one in the set that is simply too good for what it is. Mm-hmm. They did add it to the list of taboos and tack an extra 3 XP on it, but honestly, if you're willing to pay 3, you're going to pay 6 without much of a heartbeat for this one.
They actually
one for two.
It was originally eight, and then they reduced it down to six.
Yeah.
Too good. Too much. Curse token.
Too much.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to wrap up our look at the Seeker cards in the Dunwich Legacy Investigator expansion with an event. This is Deciphered Reality. 4-cost event that costs 5 experience points, 2 intellect skill icons, and a willpower skill icon, insight trait. Investigate. The difficulty of this skill test is equal to the highest shroud value among revealed locations in play. If you succeed, discover one clue from each revealed location in play. So, talking about cards with an upper floor, the upper floor on this one is only limited by the number of locations in play. If you're playing multiplayer, and I think this is strictly really a multiplayer card, you send somebody out, flip all the locations over, or if it's late game, there's a lot of locations flipped over. You can discover as many clues as you can. Now, the insight trait does become more relevant when the card pool expands. If you play Joe Diamond, he can play this for slightly cheaper, which is good. I guess the one knock against this card is that discovering a bunch of clues at a lot of locations, I would say, isn't as good as discovering a lot of clues at one location. But that's just my armchair theory as someone who doesn't play a lot of multiplayer. What do you guys think?
No, that's generally the case in 2 and beyond. It's because the way the scenarios are structured, you know, they usually will be like, okay, trudge around some locations for a little bit, kill this enemy, and then at the very end, you're going to need to, like, go to the final area and investigate, like, 6 times or 8 times or however many times. And, the scenarios are just structured in a way where Deciphered Reality isn't really that useful.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, it's a really cool effect, and the artwork is amazing. This is easily
I love it. Look, it's
one of my favorite pieces. Yeah, I have a rules question when it comes to this card. So it doesn't say instead of discovering.
So you get 2 clues. Yeah,
you get 2 clues at your location, right?
Yeah, it is an addition. Yep, in addition for successfully investigating. That's true. You get 1 clue at your location, plus a clue at every revealed location.
So there are definitely scenarios where this is wicked good.
It's true.
Certain Circle Undone locations, or certain Circle Undone scenarios, like Wages of Sin, this could be really good.
This card looks like it could be incredibly bonkers, but I think you hit the nail right on the head there, Nate, is that this effect, really big effect, and having to spend the effort to set it up and having to not discover clues at locations as you leave them behind is kind of incongruent to what the, there's my math term because we just came from higher education. It's kind of incongruent with what the game tends to ask you to do. The game tends to ask you to discover a few clues on specific locations one at a time. You spend those clues, you advance the act, you put more locations into play, and then you go to them. And then at the end, you often have to discover, say, 8 clues at one location. I feel like Deciphered Reality feels about right for a high XP Seeker card, where that it stays in the Seeker's lane of, you know, being the best in the game at clue discovery. You have to jigger it, you know, and you have to, like, arguably spend some actions to build up the effect on Deciphered Reality. And then you get all that effort back when you discover, like, 4 clues at once. I wouldn't say take this and try to discover 15 clues or anything like that. Aim for like 4.
Mm.
And then I think that's like reasonable and you can actually do that. Like you can often like at 2-player, you probably don't want to play this in single player, but you can often like get discovering 4 clues in one action is a lot, you know, and that's on top of like the fact that you discover 2 clues at the location you're at and then you have Rex Murphy on top of that. You know, you can really get a big, like, 7 actions worth of effort. And that feels pretty good for something that costs 5 XP and 4 resources to play. So it looks like it could be incredible, but, like, it takes some effort. And I feel like this is about right for a 5 XP Seeker card.
Yeah. There's also the fact that it's a skill test. So at the end of the day, you can spend 4 resources and 5 experience just to draw that tentacle and
That is the name of the Arkham. That's how Arkham works. That's why Arkham players drink lots of alcohol, right, Nate?
Yeah.
And if you don't drink lots of alcohol yet and play Arkham,
You
you
will.
will. Yeah.
I think this one gets potentially a little bit better in the Forgotten Age, where locations show up with clues on them. Obviously
Oh, yeah.
not the first scenario
Right,
because you
specific
can't play it,
scenarios
but there
that,
are some
yeah.
scenarios in that campaign where the locations appear face up with clues on them, so you don't have to do as much setup as you would say in, I'm just going to say,
That
the
much.
Midnight Masks, because it has lots of locations with clues on them, and you'd sort of have to
Yeah.
have somebody running around doing stuff, and I don't think that's super efficient. You could get really bonkers with this one if somebody's playing Double or Nothing. If you've got a rogue at the table who's playing Double or Nothing, and you can get two
Yeah.
clues at all locations and three clue,
But
two clues at yours, and
but that's a lot, that's even more setup. He's got to leave all those clues on the table, and still play Arkham Horror the card game without ever advancing the act, in order to get to that point. Yeah.
So how would we rate this one?
I've never honestly played this card. It's just not really an effect I'm looking for in a lot of decks. It
Yeah.
is, it's got a quite high ceiling. I think all that being said, I think a zero is a pretty good place for it. Maybe an elder thing. I could certainly see that argument, but I'm gonna give it a zero. I like the art on it. It's got a really powerful effect, even if you don't really manage to get that off all the time. At least you can still use it to grab at easily two, three, four clues. In multiplayer, that's probably not as hard to set up because you could just have your guardians go, have the guardian and the rogue go first. They move, you play this, and then you carry about the rest of your turn.
Yeah, that's why I'm gonna actually give this thing a zero. I think my advice is to try not to completely shoot the moon with this. Try to aim for like four. I think also in the core Dunwich Legacy card pool, you don't have that many effects that let you discover lots of clues at one location yet. So given the card pool at this point, I think this is a good zero. It rewards teamwork, which I really like, and it rewards like thinking ahead. It rewards those big brain plays where you're like holding back, discovering clues at certain locations, to set up a pretty decent sized deciphered reality. As long as you continue to play the game and, continue to advance the act without being all in on deciphered reality by leaving too many clues behind, I think then this makes a good zero. It's a good 5xp seeker card. This is right in their lane, and it's what they want to be doing.
This one feels a little expensive to me at 4 resources and 5 XP, but I mean that's the solo player in me talking.
Yeah.
That really doesn't appeal to me, but I have a tough time rating a card that can discover X clues that badly. I was trying to think of sort of how the Dunwich Legacy ends. I mean, you've got Where Doom Awaits, which this card doesn't really fit in with because it has weird investigate, it has that weird investigate you have to do at the beginning, so it's tough to open up lots of locations to trigger this. Lost in Time and Space, I think, works slightly better for it because you can sort of, depending on how the locations, those locations come out face up, am I correct, with clues on them,
Oh, yeah,
so
that's
that
true.
work is done for you. And then really, your only limit on the number of locations is how often you can get them out of the deck. So theoretically, you could end up with quite a lot of locations on the table where this effect could be quite helpful, and you don't have to do as much work to set it up. So I could see this definitely paying off in the campaign. I'm trying to think, what was it like, Undimensioned and Unseen? I
Yeah, I
could see
think that
playing
and
this as
one
well
of
in
the other
that,
cards.
because
Yeah,
that one
because you run around a lot in those.
you tend to
Yeah.
move around a lot more in that one because you're waiting for the broods to end up sort of in the right position where you can take them out. So you tend to uncover most of the map, and you tend to have to move around more in that one to avoid the broods. So something like, yeah, so I think this one's a zero in the Dunwich Legacy. I could see picking this up as the seeker just to give you that in those final couple scenarios to grab clues, especially if you're on the run or moving around a lot in both Undimensioned and Unseen and Lost in Time and Space, where you may end up with enemies and need to keep on moving. And you're also dumped, like Lost in Time and Space, you can have locations disappear from out from under you and end up sort of back at the beginning and have to, but still have this in your pocket that you could grab clues at locations you haven't been to. So yeah, I think Zero is good, a good spot for this one.
It does a lot of the things that Seeking Answers does, but on a mass scale, on a map-wide scale. So it lets you discover clues at locations that have enemies on them. It lets you discover clues at, well, you're investigating against the highest trap, but you only have to take one test. But it's that whole thing of Seekers being able to manipulate where they get the clues from.
That's going to do it for our look at the Seeker cards in the Dunwich Legacy Investigator expansion. Let us know what you think in the comments down below. Any final thoughts? This was really the expansion that sort of... The warning signs were everywhere. We just didn't quite know that this was a harbinger of things to come later down the line. And the list of taboos has an awful lot of Seeker cards on it.
And an awful lot of those Seeker cards from this expansion specifically.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, Pathfinder, Higher Ed, Rex Murphy, those are all the taboo list, and with a good reason. Mm-hmm. Sadly. And we had touched upon it in portions of the Seeker reviews, and I find it disappointing that they didn't continue on with the you can only play this card if there's a clue at your location, or the spend clues to do X type of things. You know, or like you need a certain amount of clues in order to activate this card. Like, stuff like that I feel like would be a really good balancing mechanic for the Seeker class, where yes, they're the best at investigating, but then they actually use those clues as a form of currency to do stuff. You know, like Mystics kind of do that with Doom.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
rogues generate tons of resources, so they're just buying everything. Guardians kill things and Seekers investigate things, and they've found interesting ways to make the Guardian weapons feel unique from one another, whether it's the flamethrower scorches things in its path, or the shotgun deals absurd amounts of damage, or the lightning gun hits really hard. You know, things like that. Like, they've found ways to make them interesting, and I think the Seeker class, like, had the basis for that. It was just, they just steered from it for some reason. Yeah. And we have cards like I've Got a Plan and Acidic Ichor and Higher Education that are just clearly in the wrong direction.
Yeah, they didn't really have to make all the classes to be able to do everything. And this is the set where the Seeker starts being able to do everything. Yeah, it's kind of a shame.
That's going to do it for this episode. If you enjoyed what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. If you need to contact me, I can be reached at manfromlang@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at manfromlang. Until the stars are right, keep your shotgun close and your elder sign closer. Take care out there, and happy investigating.